You're listening to the Mentors for Military podcast with your hosts, Robert Gowan, Rudy Lindsay, Mike Pritz, and Kat Kalin. We're going to be talking about team building. You know, most people, Larry, I think within the military think, oh, team building is going to be relatively easy. It's something I've always done when I was in the military. So when I go out to the private sector, I'll be able to follow right in. I can explain to the hiring manager that I can build teams and the whole thing. I think one of the things, I wouldn't say that I found most challenging, but you're going to run into a different scenario, I think, when you walk out of the military, because not everybody is following a common goal as they are within the military.
Right. You know, that it's so funny that we're even talking about this. I just had some coaching clients here, entrepreneurs, in my office today, and we were talking about this topic, and I was so glad. It was kind of giving me some things to think about. And you're right. In the military, we have a common vision that we're all working towards, you know, and we have this perception when we go into the corporate arena that it's going to be awesome because we're all working in the same company. But the problem is in the corporate arena, we all have our own agendas, right?
Yes.
And the team is only as good as the leader that's leading that team, right? And I'm really putting emphasis on leader and not manager at this point, right? I mean, we've all seen sports teams where you've got individual talent, right? Think about the old LA Lakers, right? When they had Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal on the team. Great individual players, but they didn't play nice with each other.
Well, that happens in most NFL or most professional sports teams. Let's face it. You end up having a lot of prima donnas or individuals that are making tons of money. They have individual objectives that they want to accomplish. I mean, they're probably incentivized, mind you, to accomplish certain things, whether it's so many interceptions or so. Every one of them are under their individual goals and wanting to achieve that. And that's not a team if you're not working effectively as a team. So that's a great example.
Yeah, something I've seen since I've been out, speaking directly to that, something I've found, and it doesn't apply to everyone, mind you. I'm not trying to stereotype, but I have seen it more often than not in the business sector. A lot of we struggle with loyalty, and the team building is quite different, and it seems like there are more individuals, and I call them individuals, not team members, that are in it for themselves. They want to look good in front of the boss, or they want to get that next promotion, so they would even go so far as to backstab, and sabotage to make themselves look good as an individual. So I think it's quite different, you know, crossing over from military transition into the business sector.
No doubt. I think we have an assumption in the military that the people that are on your team, and again, my only experience in the military is in special forces, that you're loyal to each other. You're loyal to the mission. There is an assumption. And so when you go into the corporate arena and you don't find that, it's mind-boggling. I still find it mind-boggling. And people in my organization know that if you're not loyal, and I mean actively loyal, which means you're working with us, for us, moving forward with whatever our mission is, then frankly, I think you're working against us.
Well, I think there are a lot of individuals, though, Larry. I think you'll agree that not all companies are the same, and not all teams or organizations are defined the same. And as you mentioned, leadership has a lot to play into that, because culture plays into that whole piece of it. But loyalty goes both ways. So you have an individual that may look at it and go, listen, you're wanting me to be loyal, but at the same time, Frank, you're not being loyal to me. I mean, you know, in any moment, you can turn around and let me go at will, and I'm gone out of here. So
right. You're absolutely right. So I've got this little social media meme or infograph that we developed, and that is one of the things we talk about, that leaders have to invest heavily in loyalty to the team, because we have to lead by example, right? You hear these people in corporate America in these organizations say, hey, our team members are like family. Okay, but would you fire a family member?
Right.
Don't
right.
even pretend. If you're not willing to be loyal to your team, don't pretend, because your team member, quote unquote, team members, employees, in other words, your team members know whether you're loyal to them
It'll
or
shake
not.
Out. And that, it'll shake out.
And that means letting them fail from time to time without, you know, threatening that you're going to fire them. That means if they do fail, you don't hang it over their head, you know, every 5 minutes. It means, did we learn anything from this? So you're right, Robert. Loyalty and Rudy, loyalty is so important when it comes to building a highly effective, what I call elite team.
You're not describing just loyalty too, because I hear trust a lot of the stuff that you're mentioning as well, Larry. Sure. And so, you know, again, trust is one of those things that's going to have to go both ways. You got to be trusting that you as a leader, Larry, are going to have my best interest in mind, that you're going to be evaluating the vision and the goals with me as part of that, so that I feel like I'm part of the team. And also you're embracing me and showing me that vision and goal in a way that I can see how I'm going to contribute. And if I don't see that, and I can't see that, it's harder for me to be loyal and trustworthy to the organization.
Yeah, you know, I agree. In the corporate arena, I think we've talked about this before. You know, the Gallup organization, every year they do their State of the American Workforce survey. And they have found that, rough numbers, 70% of the American workforce is either disengaged or actively disengaged.
That's a large number. That's
huge, right? So you got about 30% of the American workforce who is either engaged or actively engaged. Really, 70% that's disengaged or actively disengaged. Roughly 20-some percent are actively working against you, which means they're undermining the mission. They're working against the leadership. They are sharing trade secrets with the competitors. Some people have self-selected and said they're actually working another job or running a business inside the walls of their employer.
Oh my gosh.
So where's the loyalty there? Yeah.
Yeah. So why is this? Well, the survey has shown that people feel like they don't trust their leaders, which you've talked about. They don't feel any loyalty. They don't feel loyalty back from the leadership. And they don't feel like they're being professionally developed. Now, in the military, there's constant professional development, right?
Yes.
But in the corporate arena, our employees, team members, are left to their own devices to be trained, to be professionally developed. And so people don't quit their jobs, they found. They quit their leaders.
Yes.
Because they don't feel like they're respected, they're trusted, and they're not. Listen, we have a moral obligation to develop our team members, to help them become better versions of themselves. We just do. As leaders, that ought to be our job, to create more leaders. If we create more leaders, we're going to have better performing teams. I guess I don't want to monopolize the time. I mean, you get me on a rant going on this.
No, thing. I love it.
Hey, I've seen the same kind of thing, though, with guys that have gotten out of the military. I mean, the stuff that Rudy was talking about, a lack of loyalty or a lack of trust, simply because the environment that we find ourselves in afterwards doesn't offer that to us. And so we're caught in a struggle to maybe one-up somebody who maybe just a couple of years ago was a peer and a teammate. And now trying to, you know, I don't want to use the term spotlight ranger, but that's what keeps coming up. And, you know, Rudy and I have talked about this with some of the courses that we both work. And it comes back to, I think, what you said, Larry. It's leadership. I mean, the people who are in charge and who are running an organization have an obligation to share their vision and then spend time with their subordinates. And I think that's what made me successful in the Army is the amount of time I spent downward with guys who were trying to do all the work that the organization was doing. It's not anything that I did. It's all the time that I spent with the people in the organization.
All right. So I agree with you. So we may be preaching to the converted here, the far left. But why is it? Because it seems pretty simple, right? I get that it's not easy, but it's a pretty simple concept. But why don't more people do it?
I don't think they understand. They either don't understand, or they truly don't care.
Well, so in the military, we're brought up in a leadership format. So there are programs that are designed to take you through your leadership efforts. And Larry, you mentioned about a developmental program. That's part of it. And one of the things that we have within the military is we have a roadmap. You know, when you're at this rank, you should be achieving these educational skills, these types of additional trades, or whatever the case may be. And when you want to get to this level, you may have to take on new experiences and new education, either civilian-wise or military, and so on and so forth, as well as leadership training and training on how to manage people and how to work and team build and all those types of things in the private sector. They don't get that. They learn by, in most cases, the people that have led them. And unfortunately, if you're practicing that a lot and you think about it, there's probably not going to be a lot, a large percentage of really good leaders out there that are able to cast that shadow in the right way to build that level of leadership that can continue going out bigger and bigger.
Yeah, I think that you're onto something here. Several years ago, in my former organization, I remember promoting a guy just because it was a classic mistake that I made. He was good at one thing. I thought, well, if he's good at this thing, then he might be a good leader of this department. Classic mistake, right?
Yes. I've seen that many times.
But I was young. Thank goodness I learned from my mistakes. But I remember then there was a crisis in that department. And so I said to him, listen, these team members have been trying to get a hold. It was a Saturday. These team members have been trying to get a hold of you. Where the heck have you been? They've been, back then there's pagers. They've been paging you. They've been calling your house.
It was like, Saturday, I'm off.
Yeah, that's what he said.
And I said, my God.
But you're a manager.
Yeah.
His response was, I don't do that anymore. I'm a manager. I think that that is a mentality that of some people, that the higher up the organization they go, the less responsible they are for the outcome of their teams. And in the military, it's the complete opposite, isn't it? Right. Leaders eat last is one of the things that we talk about, right? There's this culture that the higher up in the organization you go, the higher up in the team, the more responsibility you have for the functioning of your team. And so that is so foreign in so many corporations that people, they can't get their heads around it. So well,
leaders,
what we look for—
Leaders inspire. You know, leaders
they ought to be
supposed to inspire. Managers manage, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think you're onto something there, Rudy, in that I'm glad you said inspire and not motivate, right? Because I think that's a mistake that a lot of managers make. They think that their job is to motivate their team. And to me, motivation is, as long as that cattle prod is sticking them in the rear end, they're moving forward, right? But what happens when that cattle prod is removed? Well, they stop moving. Whereas inspiration is almost like this drag effect that happens, you know, that they want to keep going even when the force, the pushing stops. It's more of a pulling motion. I know it's semantics, but I think inspiration is much more powerful than motivation.
But that's exactly what those organizations need, that 70% of the people are either disengaged or actively disengaged, Larry. They need that inspiration to pull them into what the organization is doing. Yeah. And I think, and I mean, I'm not the expert on corporate structure, but I think, at least from my experience in the military, you achieve that by spending time with people, by building relationships. And then you develop trust that goes both ways, and you develop loyalty that goes both ways by spending that amount of time. You were talking about it earlier with this this trip or this venture that you've got planned that you want to scale it down so that there's actually more time to spend with you.
More engagement.
Because that's what people thrive on, and they want it, and that's what that leads them toward your vision.
In the private sector, though, you know, well, let me go back. In the military, we typically learn everything we can about our subordinates. We want to know everything that makes them click, everything that makes them upset, or everything that would make them, you know, check out or whatever the case may be. That means we're going to get into their family. We're going to get into every aspect of their life. In the private sector, the human resources aspect of this comes into play, and in some cases, I think, creates a fear factor that's out there where individuals don't want to get to know about their subordinates in that kind of way, in their personal lives and such, because they think they're crossing that line. And when in reality is, that's not the case. You can certainly venture into that if the individual is willing to do it, but I can't tell you how many leaders I had within the private sector that didn't want to know anything about my life, who I was, what made Robert click, what engage, you know, would make me engage in the workplace and motivate me or inspire me to want to be a part of the organization. And when I tried to find out from them as a leader more about their personal life, they totally shut me down and did not want to let me know anything about it.
That's not a leader. That's a manager.
Yeah.
Right.
But these are C-level individuals in corporations. That's a very high individual.
They might have used to have been good at what they do, but it doesn't sound like it now.
But see, this is the thing, though. This is why you see veterans who move into the corporate arena, they're so much more successful than their non-veteran counterparts. So imagine if these CEOs actually understood what it is that we're talking about. Yeah, they might be good. They might be really powerful people in these organizations. But how great could they be if they understood this stuff, or if they employed this stuff, made sure it worked? You know, a few years ago, I wrote this, you know, an acrostic is, right? So I came up with this term that kind of helps describe what we're talking about here. So it's an acrostic using the word elite, right? Elite teams. So I just want to share this with you for a second. So the first thing I think that we need to do is evaluate aptitude. That's what the military does, right? The first thing you do before you even go in, before you even raise your hand, they evaluate your aptitude by giving you the ASVAB, right? The Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery. So, Robert, what these leaders ought to be doing to their team is evaluating their aptitude. That's number one. And then what we have to do is then we have to leverage those strengths. So you evaluate what their aptitude is. You leverage their strengths. That's what we do in Special Forces, right? Every person on an A team has different strengths, different skill set, different aptitude. And then number three, what they have to do is what we've already talked about, that is inspire our team members towards their fullest potential, right? So you got evaluate, leverage, inspire. And then the fourth thing is, and this is why a lot of people leave organizations, is then we have to train them in their job. And then, of course, cross-train them.
Good point.
Familiar?
Yeah.
Special Forces.
That's a great point that's not done.
Cross-train them.
Yeah.
So in case somebody leaves, you can immediately, you know, fill in. Okay. And then the fifth thing in this acrostic elite is and this is the scary part for leaders, then you have to empower them to thrive, which means take your hands off the wheel and let them do their job and don't micromanage.
Love it.
Have you ever been micromanaged?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't micromanage people because it sucks, right? So that might help your listeners, you know. So evaluate, leverage, inspire, train, and empower.
I love it. I think that's actually, there's so much in that. And wow, Larry, I mean, you've definitely cornered that. Because there's a whole book, I mean, there's tons of books even on execution and those types of things, Good to Great, and those, right. All those books that we, I think we even talked about in the last podcast, where individuals don't take advantage of just these things. People are a big component of an organization and what make it more effective, and team building is that aspect. If you can build teams and they have the trust, they have the loyalty, you're going to go a lot further if they see that vision that now you have placed in front of them. They're going to buy into it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But did you notice in this acrostic, not one thing did say, hey, I've got to go do a ropes course.
You know, it's funny because if you Google team building, 90% of the things you'll find is on that kind of stuff. Ropes
exactly.
course. Here are exercises that you can do to build the team. Here are, you know.
The most high performing teams that I see in the corporate arena, they don't do anything outside the walls of the business. What they do is they do the stuff you were talking about, Robert. They're building relationships with their team members. They're building trust. They're evaluating. They're leveraging strengths. They're helping people become exactly common goals. They're helping people become better versions of themselves right within the walls and confines. The problem is, I think that we've got this corporate checklist that says, "Hey, manager, what'd you do to build your for team building this quarter?" And they check the box. Oh, we went out and we did race go-karts. Oh, good. All right, good.
Yeah.
Box checks. Right?
So spot on.
Yeah, but then they're not doing the stuff that we're talking about. The hard, this is the hard stuff, by the way. The stuff that we're talking about here, building relationships, identifying people's strengths, training them, cross-training them. That's an investment, right? But we think that if I go out and do some go-kart racing, which is easy, right? Because all I have to do is pull out my credit card and pay for it. And pay for a few drinks. That's easy, but it is not effective at all.
Well, you know, and part of that too in team building, an element that we may have left off is communication. You've got to be able, and we said, you know, about going out and talking with them and in meeting with them and stuff, but you've got to be able to communicate in a way where they feel like you're not trying to hold things close to the chest. You can't be a leader that feels like, because now you have the title and the position, that you can keep information that you feel is privy to you at your level away from them, because then you start building that distrust in individuals who are not loyal because they're not buying in and they feel like Larry is now trying to keep information from me because Larry thinks he's important.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, So this other thing I have is like these seven tips for building elite teams, and that's one of them. So the first one is be friendly to everybody. You have to be friendly, right? You got to make sure and treat everybody on the team with dignity and respect. But the second point is what you're talking about, and it's open book management. Tell your team everything.
Yes.
Because whether you think that they know how the company is performing, they know. They probably know better than you do about what's going on. So just open the books, tell them everything. Shared knowledge builds the two things we've been talking about. Shared knowledge builds loyalty and it builds trust. Have to, you know, I'll just finish these things off. Then you got to practice what I call Pulitzer Prize plagiarism, you know. Steal good ideas from other people, you know, give credit when you can, but we don't have to rebuild, we don't have to reinvent the wheel, but we have to surround ourselves with people who are bolder and brighter than we are. We have to do that. If we're the smartest person in the room, we're in the wrong room, right?
That's Rudy's favorite saying, by the way. Yeah.
That's so accurate.
It's so powerful. And then we have to invest really heavily in loyalty, like we were talking about earlier. And then we have to really realize that fairness is really what's next to godliness. It's not cleanliness. It's fairness is next to godliness. I heard managers and people in leadership positions in the past say, hey, I treat everybody the same. Well, you can't treat everybody the same because we're all motivated and inspired by different things. We all have different backstories. Well, you can treat everyone fair.
Right.
And then the sixth thing is we have to laugh. We have to have a culture where there's humor, that we don't take ourselves too seriously. So we have, right? I mean, laughter lowers the temperature of any, in any room, right? And it helps us, you know, think differently, clears the cobwebs. And then finally, we have to know ourselves. You know, we can't build elite teams if we don't know how we're built. And if we think that we're going to build a team by everybody being just like us, then that's a recipe for disaster. We have to know our strengths, know our weaknesses, so that we can augment our weaknesses with other people's strengths.
So do you kind of call these your guiding principles then, Larry? I mean...
Yeah, I guess that's what I would call them. I just call my 7 tips for building an elite team. But yeah, these are guiding principles when it comes to building a team.
Yeah.
Robert, I'm going to take that. These are my guiding principles for building teams. That's much better than 7 tips. See, I'm not the smart guy on the call. I'm just...
No, I mean, I think it actually makes sense. And that's the whole thing, that you go back to what you originally said. If it makes sense, why aren't more people doing it? And it is a crazy question that comes up. But time and time again, you end up running into leaders who, for whatever reason, were given these positions, were given these titles, and maybe perhaps even like you mentioned, Larry, was because you thought they were the right type of leader or the right type of individual for that role. And when you put them in it, you're certainly not going to go back and go, Larry, I got to take it away from you. God, I totally messed up. You shouldn't have been given that role and that title. I'm going to drop you back down to where you were.
I did that.
Did you?
I did that.
Yeah.
I did. I try not to repeat mistakes that I make. And I want to coach people up or coach them out of the organization. Now, what I did with this guy, obviously, then I put him through a couple of other stress tests to see how he was going to respond. And he responded the same way. So I knew this wasn't a one-time thing. And so, yeah, he was given the opportunity. You can leave the organization or we can go back. He knew he wasn't going to cut it inside the organization in that current position, so he ended up leaving on his own, right?
Yeah.
I think we have to do that. But what I've learned since then, because that was probably the third or fourth promotion I'd done given somebody after I left the military. So it was really about that time when I started saying, well, damn it, what was it that made, you know, what is it that the military is doing that they're able to create really high-performing teams? And so they, right, we talked about this, ASVAB. And in the civilian world, you don't have an ASVAB, but you've got Myers-Briggs, you've got the Colby A Index, you've got the StrengthFinders assessment. And so what I started doing at that point is starting giving assessments to people to measure their aptitudes and measure their strengths before they got promoted. So in our hotel organization, where we've got, probably 70 or 80 different managers, supervisors, or leaders, every one of them has taken the StrengthFinders 2.0 assessment, which measures their top 5 strengths. Actually, it does 30-some, but we identify their top 5.
I've had that done before, yeah.
Yeah, and we give them the Colby A Index, which measures the cognitive brain. How do you reply to stimuli? How do you show up just naturally in life? So that's what we measure. Instead of an ASVAB, we give those kind of things. And it really helps you identify where people ought to be sitting on the bus.
You know, the StrengthFinder Index is so good. It's so helpful. The Myers-Briggs is good in working with teams because you can find out individuals about how they're going to interact and play with their peers. And what makes them, you know, what motivates them or inspires them. So, I mean, there's pros and, you know, to each of those.
Sure.
But the Strength Finders is really, I think, effective. And in my case, it was one of these things that for me validated much of what I thought of who I was and how I acted towards individuals and making decisions and those types of things. And it laid out exactly. And when you start taking these tests, if you're truly honest as you go into them and take them with true sincerity and not trying to think how I want to be, but just who you are, I think you're going to learn a lot about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's, I think, one of the keys to that, Robert, is that none of these are tests. They're assessments. All right. But we go into these thinking that they are tests, and so we try to game the system, right?
Right.
But if you go into it, there is no right, there is no wrong, and the sooner I know the real me by being honest, the better team I can build around me, right? So I think that that's really critical in this. So you're right about Strength Finders. The thing I like about Colby is that it measures – it's got four action modes, they call it. Fact finder, follow through, quick start, and implementer. The great thing is, like, I'm a really high quick start. I'm the kind of guy, I'm the risk taker. I'm the guy that would stand at the edge of the building, jump off, and build a plane on the way down, right? I'm really low on follow through. I hate systems. I don't get stuff done unless I have a team around me that helps execute on these brilliant ideas that I come up with, right? And I'm a mid-range fact finder. I'll do a little bit of research, but really I rely on my gut, right? So if I don't have high follow-through, high systems people around me, nothing would ever get done.
That's a key point.
And I wouldn't know this unless I had taken these assessments. And so what ends up happening is like, no wonder I'm like I am now that you know yourself.
So surround yourself, you said it, with smart people. Find your weaknesses. Find what it is that, you know, you need assistance with. Hire those individuals or bring them in or find those individuals that have those areas that you're weak in, and it'll make you that much better because you're not just going to rely, if you're a good leader, again, you're not just going to rely on them solely. You're going to learn still by what they're doing, and it'll bring you up even that much more.
But part of this takes courage to do, though.
It does.
You know? It takes courage because to surround yourself with people who are bolder and brighter than you are, you need to be willing to not be the one who's always getting the attention or always taking the credit. Right? Good leaders give the credit away, right? And good leaders accept responsibility even when it's not theirs for failing. But that's most of corporate America doesn't get that. It's they have it flipped around, right? They want to take credit for the work that their subordinates did. And if there's a problem, then they throw people under the bus.
Yep. Right? But when a leader does that, Larry, that's when he builds the loyalty and trust.
Exactly. I mean,
that's when trust and loyalty goes down to everybody else in the organization.
Totally, Mike. I totally agree with you on that. And this is where it takes courage, though, right? Because there's the fear that if they take that bullet or they step in front of that bus for their team, then they're going to lose their job. I mean, how often do you see people in corporate America where they say, I'm quitting, I'm resigning from my position because I don't agree with the direction of the organization? And you know what happens? They get hired so quickly by other people because those are the types of people that organizations want on their team.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. So
I'll give you a quick snapshot. It just happened last month, Larry.
Yeah.
You know, I make pretty decent money. I'm not trying to pull my own chain here, but it relates directly to what you're talking about. You know, I had another defense contract company hit me up for one of the things I specialize in, and they offered me $30,000 a year pay raise. Wow. And so, of course, it piqued my interest. But the one thing that we talked about earlier, which I feel very strongly about, and it's loyalty. And so I started asking questions about the company, and I found immediately it was ran in a very different way than the current company I'm working with. Yeah. And that loyalty comes into play. And I felt good about declining the $30,000 a year pay raise by going with that company, starting off. And, you know, my supervisors, my managers, my leaders, president of the company, they know my loyalty, you know, and they see it happening all the time. There's a handful of us within the organization that we're constantly getting hit up on by all the different defense contractors. And they know, you know, they they treat us right. They treat us fair. They lead. They inspire us. They, you know, we're clued in to what the organization's doing all the time. You know, they allow us to make our own mistakes and run with you know, crazy ideas. And if we fall on our face, and they pick us up and dust us off and get right back at it. So I absolutely love the company, and I am extremely loyal to that company.
Yeah.
Such that, you know, I'll turn down other positions. And
isn't that amazing? I think it's a great commentary where we just are in society, because, like, so my father was a World War II guy. You know, he's on Iwo Jima in the Marines. And for his generation, the thing that would attract, I'm going to use this word intentionally, loyalty back then would be prestige in the company, pay, and status. That's how you would attract somebody. Hey, I'll give you $30,000 more to come work for my company. And back then, you would move.
And the gold watch at the end of the 30-year career.
That's right. Today, what drives people is exactly what you just got through saying, Rudy, is loyalty, sense of mission, passion, and meaning. That's what keeps people around in organizations today.
And I'm around like-minded individuals.
Right.
You know? And again, I'm not the smartest guy in the room by any stretch, but I know everyone thinks the same as I do. So it's very enjoyable.
To work.
So, you know, culture is a big part of this, Larry. I mean, you know, you're creating, when you're talking about creating a team environment, you're really talking about creating a culture that everybody buys into, understands, embraces. And in those situations, people don't leave. They don't feel like they want to. It's a family environment. It's somebody, you know, it's a group of individuals that are like-minded, like, you know, Rudy mentioned, or sharing in the same stories. They're like family and friends, and they probably socialize after work, not just during work. I mean, I can't tell you how many jobs where I worked in environments where at the end of the day, I didn't want anything to do with the individuals I work with. It was great while they were there, and we had a great environment and such, but it wasn't something I wanted to carry on after. When I did find a place in the private sector where you had a group of individuals in a team where everybody clicked, everybody knew what their role was, everybody brought something to the table, the leader empowered or allowed individuals to be, you know, have a lot of autonomy and bring stuff to the group and such, you felt like you wanted to not just spend time with these individuals during the day. You wanted your evenings, your weekends, and everything. You know, you texted. You were just part of that group.
Yeah.
That's when you know you really have a good team.
Yeah. Culture is so overlooked, but it's really one of the most important things to an effective team. Like Rudy was saying, you know, he knew that he's with around like-minded people, right? He knows that people have his back. The guy is six. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of people who have not been in the military just don't understand the value of the camaraderie that we talk about, that we understand in the military. That is powerful. It's, you know, Napoleon talked about, you know, that people will die for a small shred of fabric. He's talking about the flag, right? And that's really the sense of mission that you're talking about. But leaders have to, you said it earlier, I think it was you, Robert, communicate.
Yeah.
You got to communicate the sense of mission. You got to talk about, here's what our expectation is. You know, we grew pretty fast over a few years, and we do these confidential, what we call them, work climate surveys every so often. When we bring on a new property, we do them every 6 months. It's basically, part of it is a 360-degree review or a peer review that we would do in Special Forces, right? The last thing you want to do is be peered out, right? That talks about an embarrassment, right?
Yeah.
And so we do these work climate surveys. And about a year and a half ago, when we did our work climate survey, people were saying, hey, we don't feel connected to Larry anymore. We want to have more access to Larry. We don't really understand where we're going as an organization. When we had more access to Larry, he could tell us where we are going. So I realized I'm starting to fall short here. So how can we increase the engagement that we were talking about earlier? Well, let's do communication. So one of the things that we do now, and we did our quarterly one yesterday, is I now do a quarterly state of the company webinar. Where every person can get on this thing, and I say, hey, basically an AAR, you guys will get this. Here's what we've done right in the past quarter. Here's what we did wrong in the past quarter, right? And here's how we're going to improve going forward. And here's what the mission is. And I'm really quite transparent, and I'm talking to them just like I'm talking to you guys. right now. It's not some pre-planned speech. I mean, I do have a slide deck that I go through, but it helps people feel like they're on the same team, that it's not just, hey, Larry in the home office is off doing one thing and we're just sitting back here following orders. No, they really feel like they're part of it. And I try to engage them and ask for their feedback. And I've been doing this for about a year now, a little over a year. And it's amazing the number of emails and messages that I get afterwards where people say, oh, that was, you know, I feel so much better. I feel like I'm part of the team. And it's we have seen engagement spike just because I'm doing that. Well, I'm doing a little bit more than that. But that one thing about actually communicating more effectively and more directly is powerful. And there's another thing. I don't know if you guys know Richard Ryerson. If not, I should introduce you to him. Former Marine Corps pilot. And he does these things now for organizations that we're doing, where we actually record a podcast for our most important shareholders and stakeholders. That's for our team members. And so every 2 weeks, we release a new podcast where Rich and I will interview a fellow team member or a manager or a client or an expert in the industry just about their journey in life. And so people, again, they feel more connected with the leadership. And that, honestly, I think that's one of the most important things that we've done as an organization recently, to make sure that our team members feel like they are more engaged, more connected, and a higher sense of community in the organization.
You know, I was part of a large organization, and we had a department or a team that, in the grand scheme of things, was a small little blip on the radar. Uh-huh. And so one of the things that we did in not only trying to bring awareness to the rest of the community, but also to the team and let them know that how we are as a culture or as an organization, was we did somewhat of what you just said. We actually went out to some of the leaders within the organization and said, how do you see us? Give us a vision of what you see us doing. And they would say things like, you guys are a great organization that really supports our team by doing A, B, and C, and I can't do what we do without your assistance and the support. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate every one of the people that work under your leadership that do what you do, because we couldn't do what we do without you. That was so powerful to the individuals that listened to that, because they had never been exposed to these leaders other than maybe an email or, you know, a picture on a website or something, the internal company website. But when they saw the video, they saw Larry now speaking to them directly and saying, thank you. Yeah. And I appreciate what you do, and here's what you do to support my team. Powerful. Very powerful.
How do you guys mitigate, and Mike, you've seen this too, brother, with the command climate surveys, how do you guys mitigate a low ranking enlisted guy for the military or a low ranking corporate employee? How do you mitigate them feeling enough trust in that leadership or that management to openly come out and discuss a problem that they're having without the fear of blowback or, oh my gosh, my job.
It's a great question.
How do you guys deal with that?
Yeah, that is an awesome question. So first of all, we make sure that they understand that it's totally confidential, that I never see where it's coming from. In fact, we have an outside party who administers the thing now. Yeah. So I never see directly who it comes from. But it's hard if there is not already a sense of trust in the organization. All right. So the first time I did this, it was at my former organization. And I knew that my partner and I were going to get blasted. I just knew it. The worst thing you can do is ask for feedback and then not respond to it and make corrective action.
Good point. You know? Yes.
The worst thing you can do is take it and then not say anything, right? And so my partner and I went back to the team and said, oh, my gosh. Number one, thank you for your feedback. And honestly, boy, does this hurt.
Yeah.
You know? And it is well deserved. And so here's what we're going to do moving forward. And so the first couple of times we did it, you know, we took our lickings.
Yeah.
But then what we actually did is we executed on some of the suggestions that people had made. And so it's like trust in any relationship. It takes time to build and only a minute to ruin, right? Sure, sure. And so we went back, and so we actually started incorporating some of the ideas or making changes where we could. And over time, people started realizing, hey, I can mention something and it's not going to get back to me, you know? But the first, and we tell them over and over again, there is no retaliation.
Yeah.
It takes time, because we are generally a distrusting society or distrusting of authority, right? We think that the man's keeping us down and we're exploiting all the workers. But I think it just takes time, Rudy, to do it. But ultimately, like in our organization now, I mean, I've got room attendants and bellmen who come up to me and will say, hey, we're kind of screwing it up here. You might want to take a look at it, because they know they're not going to lose their job.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great point, too, because you may have leaders that are up and down the chain. So let's say, for instance, Larry is the CEO and he comes out and he gives this impression that he wants to hear your opinion. But unfortunately, I'm down here on the bottom and I work for Rudy, and Rudy is my manager, or maybe even two levels up. Rudy works for Mike, and that's not something Mike wants to have happen, is for information from his team to get to Larry without it first going through Rudy and Mike, and he believes in the whole chain of command thing. And Larry, you brought up an excellent point. By having these types of avenues by which individuals can participate and get their information up to Larry, to the voice that wants to hear. First off, that just shows you right there of what I just portrayed, that you have a bad culture and a bad organization in terms of leadership. But we used to create focus teams as well, where we'd come in and go, you know what, we're trying to create a team here, and what we want is we want to select individuals from this team. And oh, by the way, Mike and Rudy, we selected John, Susie, and Jack from your team to be a part of this focus group. In other words, you didn't have a play. You couldn't pick the individuals that you wanted to be on this, who you thought would bring the voice that you wanted. Exactly. And instead, we would come through and we create a focus team so that we could get the information to Larry of who we thought. And typically, we try to find individuals who would normally fly under the radar because it would empower them. You would see a different person come out of that room. They now felt like their voice is being heard. That's a great point, Rudy. I mean, excellent point.
Robert, I think that the type of stovepipe leadership structure you described a minute ago is what's wrong with a lot of different, at least in the military structure. Agreed. It's what's wrong with the flow of information. It's the kind of thing that working under Stan McChrystal several years ago, we really got away from. Mm-hmm. And how do we get the most information to the guy who can make the decision the fastest? And it's to eliminate some of those guys. Or maybe not eliminate them, but not make them feel intimidated because the information is not flowing through them, because that slows the process. So it goes back to what Larry said, is when the information comes up and we get it, we act on it, but we don't take action against the people who didn't give it to us, who are most close to us, right? Yeah. So the bellman gives you some information, you act on it. You don't take action against the manager of the hotel, you just fix the problem.
Exactly.
And that helps the organization run more streamlined. Or let the manager fix the problem, right?
Yeah. It's so important. So one of the things that I used to do, and I've been trying to figure out how I can start doing this again, is I used to do monthly lunches with Larry. And managers and leaders wouldn't go to this. It would be the quote-unquote, I'm using air quotes, line level team members that we would have. And so the tone was set among all the managers and leaders in the organization that this is the type of organization that we are. It is a more flat organization and not hierarchical command and control, stovepipe, whatever description you want to use in this. That as leaders, we have to get as close to the worker and as close to the client, consumer, whatever you want to call them, as possible. We got to get rid of those layers that are in
the pulse. That's the pulse of the organization. You got to keep your finger on the pulse of it.
So something I think that we should talk about, because individuals are going to be listening to this and they're going to go, okay, how do I know, what are the symptoms that kind of symptoms that signal a need for team building? How do I know that I don't have an effective team? What are some of the things that's going to stand out,
right,
Larry?
So there's three things that I look at constantly that I have to be measuring. I think every leader, CEO ought to be looking at. One is team member satisfaction. One is client satisfaction. And the third is cash flow. Right. If you've got a poorly engaged team, you're going to see decline and all that kind of stuff. What you're going to see is low productivity. You're going to see high pilferage. You're going to see high turnover in the organization. Those are all lagging indicators. Right. But the leading indicators are going to be client satisfaction. Right. Because if you got high client satisfaction, that means that they're going to be buying from you again in the future. Right.
It's up,
right.
right? If you've got high team member or employee satisfaction, that means that they're going to be loyal, more likely to be loyal to you. There's going to be higher productivity. There's going to be less turnover. There's going to be higher higher morale. And cash flow, of course, right? We're not looking at profit at this point. Profit, yes, we have to look at profit. But without cash flow, your business isn't going to keep going, right? If you've got low morale, guess what? Your cash flow is going to be low because it means you have low productivity. It means you've got pilferage. It means that people don't care about inventory control, right? So too often what we always look at is the lagging indicators. We look at P&Ls, right? Crazy. That's not what we ought to be. Yes, we have to look at that, no doubt about it. But we need to be looking forward as much as we can.
Man, you are getting like my juices going here because I'm a Six Sigma guy and then former being, you know, being in leadership roles in companies. But when you start talking about leading and lagging indicators, that's it. I mean, that's what it's all about.
In the same room, Robert, because I don't want you to get that turned on while I'm...
I'd give you a hug right now, Larry. That's good stuff. Yeah, but so many people don't understand just that. They focus so much on the wrong type of indicators to lead an organization. It's really simplistic when you break it down.
Well, listen, our job as leaders is to fix problems, right? I know, I'm pretty sure I shared this with you the last time I was on your show, right? At the end of the day, our job as leaders is to fix problems. And we've got four kinds of problems. We have people problems, we have process problems, we have profit problems, and product problems, right? People, process, product, and profit. At the end of the day, if you have a product problem or a process problem or a profit problem, it all comes back to a people problem. We have to be, if you're going to be a great leader, you have to be a great team builder, a great motivator, inspire. You got to be a great people person. You got to know how to build relationships. Have you ever seen a great leader who cannot build a good relationship with somebody?
Never.
No, it's all, you got to be a people person, right? Otherwise, if you are crappy at building relationships, you're going to be stuck away or squirreled away in some room. Now, that doesn't mean you need to be charismatic, right? I mean, that's a classic mistake. We think that we've been sold this bill of goods that in order to be a great CEO or entrepreneur, you have to be really charismatic. And no, to be a great leader, you need to be able to communicate effectively, right? And if you're not great at building relationships, you need to darn well have people on your team who can build relationships.
You know, Maxwell wrote a book about 360-degree leadership. I can't tell you how many individuals that I've ran into where I've talked with them about they don't even understand that they're leaders, and yet they're influencing up, they're influencing down, and they're influencing sideways. If you're doing that, you don't need the title, you don't need the position, you're a leader.
Yeah, I think John Quincy Adams had a quote, and I'm going to kill it here, but basically he said, if you inspire people... you inspire change, you're a leader.
Yep.
That's kind of it.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple.
Can't get any. So what did you call these four problem tips?
I didn't call them anything. I just said as a okay. leader, those are the four things that we have to focus on. We're always, as leaders, we are supposed to be solving problems. And in any organization, literally any organization, I can't think of one not. If you got a problem, it usually falls under one of those four categories: people, product, process, and profits.
Right. Okay. Great, great points. All right. So we covered all of the areas. Are there tips within an individual as a leader that they need to make sure that they do within their team to be more effective? I know one of the things that I've heard of is that you need to make sure that you lay down certain ground rules. Like, this is how we're going to work together. This is how we're going to make decisions. What is your feedback on that? Because
yeah, there's five of them that I kind of refer to often. Is we have to actively listen. Actively listen, not just, you know, and your active listening is, you know, Rudy says something to me and I say, well, tell me more. How so? Right? You want to pull information out of people. That's number one. Number two, we have to discover our team members' goals. This goes back to what you're talking about, Robert. We got to know the people on our team. What do they personally want out of life? And how can we help them become better versions of ourselves? So number one is listen actively. Number two is discover team members' goals. Number three is we have to spot corrections. make spot corrections and quickly, you know, address them and do it privately. How often do you see managers and leaders, they know there's a problem, but they don't have the guts or courage to either, number one, address it quickly, or number two, do it privately. So they embarrass people out, you know,
they want
publicly.
To flex the power and make everybody know their what position they're in.
Right, right. And number four is we have to expect and praise superior performance. Did you get that? We have to expect that we're going to have superior performance. I've seen a lot of managers and leaders, they're like Eeyore, oh, we're never going to do this. We're never going to be great. Right?
Wow. Yeah.
I say, be like Tigger. Be like Tigger. Expect great things are going to happen. And then when things do happen, you got to praise it, right? And then the fifth thing is you got to lead by example. You got to lead by freaking example.
Yeah.
You can't expect that I'm going to sit here in my office with my feet up on the desk and lack integrity, but expect that my team is going to be out there taking the hill and doing so with integrity. It's not going to happen.
You know, there a lot of books are written about your leadership shadow and, you know, how you cast that. And I think it's a lot of just what you just described there. It's if you're doing these things, then you're casting that type of shadow to other individuals where they understand what type of leader you are, where you stand, what you expect from them. You're casting that out. I mean, you're creating that environment where they understand their place and how they're going to contribute to it. And I think in a lot of cases, in the private sector, corporate America, leaders think because they have the title, they have the position, it's much easier for them to stand behind it. They did it within the military, mind you. You had individuals that stood behind their rank and wanted you to trust whatever it was that they were saying, because I said so. I'm the leader, and that's what you're supposed to do is listen to me. You know,
but they don't. That kind of attitude does not instill real loyalty that Rudy was talking about earlier. You might say, "Yeah, I'm loyal to you." You might do "Yes, sir," "No, sir," while in front of them. But what happens when that guy is out of the room?
Respect and loyalty are two different things.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. Respect your position. As
we're going to talk about you like a dog, Larry, when you leave the room. That's what we're going to do. Yeah. We're going to talk about that guy, Larry. Jeez, oh, man. You know, every time. Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate everybody.
Guys, thank you so much for having me on. I really do.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and at Facebook by searching at Mentors, the number 4 MIL, and please subscribe to our podcast. It's free, and it ensures you're the first to hear our latest podcast show. We have several options depending upon your device, and we're at iTunes, SoundCloud, at Stitcher, and at TuneIn Radio. Hey everyone, Robert here. I love supporting veteran-owned companies, and Mentors for Military recently partnered with Skeleton Optics to offer a 10% discount to our listeners. That's right, 10%. These aren't your regular run-of-the-mill sunglasses, by the way. The frames are handcrafted in Italy with Zeiss Vision lenses. Use the code MENTORSFORMIL or Mentors the number 4 MIL at SkeletonOptics.com, and you'll receive your 10% discount automatically at checkout. Hurry up and get on over there to support a veteran-owned company.